As much as I like to fight everyone, I'm having a pretty good time here. Why you mad? Why you mad? Why you mad?
Yeah, we'll just start. I'm already recording. Here's what I'm mad about this week. This is a tweet from Patrick Cotnoir. It says, since everyone is talking about Frasier, here's Kelsey Grammer. Everyone's talking about Frasier, by the way, because I guess they're like rebooting Frasier.
Yeah.
Which is very
That's
funny.
Terrible.
Guilty as charged.
Since everyone is
it's for Paramount Plus. Yeah.
Oh, of course. You know about that. Since everyone is talking about Frasier, here's Kelsey Grammer's, and then in quotes, stand up from 1994's Just for Laughs Festival. It's something.
Oh my God.
It's crazy. This is what used to happen at Just for Laughs. He's on a stage with a piano and a full band.
That's horrible.
Laughing in rhythm. Laughing in rhythm.
I didn't know he did stand-up. Did he do stand-up?
No, he doesn't.
Just for Laughs did, like, characters and shit. Or does, like, characters.
Oh, but maybe that's what's going on. But this is also...
He's trying to be, like, an SNL guy.
This is also not a character, though. When you feel tickled,
you've got a like, funny songs. You know, that's a character, you know?
I guess.
Musical comedy?
Yeah. Alive for Randy Moe.
It just goes on like
without
that.
Seeing it, I just imagine that there are puppets there.
No, but yeah, same vibe. It's like, you know, stand up adjacent shit where you're like, how did this get lumped in with us? Anyway, hello everyone, welcome to the show. That was Kelsey Grammer introing us in 1994.
Hey,
I'm Jake. Hey, Lisa.
Hi, Jake. We are joined today by a friend of the pod, but also a friend of us individually. Well, friend of mine, girlfriend of Jake, Kate Willett, hilarious comedian. Welcome to the show, Kate.
Hello.
You're our first repeat.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
The first repeat?
Yeah. Well, you're our you first know, repeat guest.
I fucked my way back onto Why You Mad, I guess.
It wouldn't have worked if I didn't like you, though. So it's not like a one-sided
effort. Of course you like
effort.
Me. We had sex, Louisa.
Yeah.
But,
that
I was
how
do
I got on the podcast.
Oh, whoops. Okay, yeah. See, I fucked up the punchline. I could never be a stand-up. People think that I try, and I'm like, no, I would never.
Yeah.
I'd fail miserably.
That's something you
I haven't seen you in forever. Sorry, Jake.
I know,
hold on.
I miss
hold
you.
On. I got to talk to Kate
go,
for a second.
Go.
I haven't seen you in so long. How are you? How have you been? I mean, I know that you just put out a book, which we're going to talk about, but other than the book, which is an amazing feat during this pandemic year, what's been going on?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say, right? Because there hasn't been that much going on, but I have been, you know, I wrote the book, recorded the book, doing a bunch of interviews and articles about it, and chilling with my cats, kind of hunkering down for the winter with the terrible cats, Jake sometimes, and that's, I mean, I think spring will be a better time to ask me that question, but
I know, right?
I've been doing a lot of self-help activities, you know,
okay.
Like just taking the winter to go internal, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn, dude. I guess, yeah, me too. I definitely crashed. I mean, I feel like I've been saying that I've been crashing, so it's been like a rolling crash, like an ongoing crashing for like about 6 weeks, I think. But then it fucking culminated in like, I just like went and got help and it fucking is working out. I actually like, I was trying to get a therapist to do like talk therapy, right? But I don't have insurance. And so I kept like reaching out to people and then like their schedules or their feed like didn't work for me. So I couldn't get to anyone. And then after talking on this podcast about like my inability to concentrate or finish books, speaking of, sorry, Kate. And all this stuff. Like, a bunch of people told me that it sounds like I have ADD or ADHD, right? So I was like, you know what? Let me go to a psychiatrist and try to get medicated for ADHD while I look for a therapist to, like, talk through other shit through, right? And so I went to a psychiatrist and I was like, I'm here for ADHD. And this fucking bitch was like, you have severe PTSD. And I was like, oh, fuck. So I'm on antidepressants again. But it's a totally different kind. And it seems to be working out. The first week was kind of like rough, but which is probably why I was also being an asshole on the internet.
Yeah, I have complex PTSD. Love to have complex PTSD.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, let's talk about it sometime off the air. Yeah. But yeah, so fucking I got medicated, but then I also bought this like $100 exercise bike on the advice of Steve Hernandez, actually.
Steve!
Yeah, shout out to Steve.
Oh, nice.
And well, you know what? Fuck Steve. He made fun of me because I got a jump rope, right? Like, I was like, I'm going to try to be active. So I bought a jump rope.
That sounds so great.
Right? Thank you. This motherfucker laughed at me. And he was like, Jake, he was like, you're not a boxer. And he was like, what the fuck does that mean? And he was like, you're going to hurt your fucking knees. And I was like, oh. So then he suggested that I should do what he did, because this is something that works for a fatty. Is get like a cheap exercise bike, because you could do it while you're watching TV.
I kind of want to do that, but I already ride a bike and everyone's like, someone's
kind of weird.
What, did someone steal your exercise bike? People are going to say that at me on the internet and shit.
Well, first of all, there's ways that you could get like a little weird floor clamp where you could use your actual bike and like clamp it to the floor.
Holy shit.
What? Yeah. And be like, you know, do like, what is it? Standing bike exercise, basically.
Okay.
Yeah, I had no idea you could get a $100 exercise bike.
Yeah, the one that I got was like $130, but I had points on the credit card and whatever, so I ended up paying like $98 for it or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was doubtful about how cheap it was and shit, but I've been doing 10 miles a day, only for a few days, don't get crazy. because like I said, the first week of medication was not good. I was not okay. I slept a lot. And then I've been doing the fucking exercising, and I don't know if it's like the medicine helping or the exercising, but it's helping. I'm sleeping better. I still can't concentrate, so I still think I have ADHD. So anyway, point is, I've been working through shit that I feel like just all crashed on me at the end. Like, I know we're not at the end of the pandemic, but it does feel like now that there's like a light at the end of the tunnel with like people getting vaccinated and spring is coming. And so even if there wasn't a light at the end of the tunnel, it seems like a lot of people are moving into like fuck it mode, you know? All of a sudden, we're having time to consider everything that has happened in the last year. And like, honestly, the people we've lost, the relationships we've lost from people like leaving, you know, from just like friendships breaking off because we had different personal COVID health codes, you know, and then it was just like, or because, you know, some people were doing live stand up and because I talk shit about live stand up, they think I hate them. So we stopped talking, like shit like that, you know?
Yeah.
So a lot of shit, just like processing, man, I've been like thinking about my teenage years, you know, all the drugs I've done. Great times, but also things that I'm like, oh, I probably shouldn't have done that. You know?
Yeah.
Going through like a whole fucking assessment of everything.
Yeah, you're in like a really heavy phase shift right now.
Yeah.
I'm feeling that too.
What about you, Jake? Are you just coasting and shit?
No, I feel that too. I'm kind of doing the same. Like, yeah. I'm like exercising and shit. I've been like trying to get that started unsuccessfully over and over again. I'm just doing it again, but it's kind of working right now. But like, I also am kind of feeling that like heavy existential shit. And like, one thing I did the other day for some reason, I don't know why, it just happened in my head, was I sat down and I thought about every room I've ever lived in, like consecutively. Like,
I saw when you tweeted about that, I was like, what a weird fucking thing. And then of course I went off on a similar thing, and then I was like, oh, fucking Jake,
dude, it's weird. It's weird to think about. It freaked me out, man. I don't know. I mean, we're going through something very bizarre with the pandemic and everything, so I think it's perfectly natural, and we're in the middle of like winter, you know, so you're
I feel like, I don't know, I don't want to say that you two had a pandemic advantage in any way, but I will say I think I went through something different than the two of you this year, because this is honestly the first time in my entire life that I have like learned to entertain myself alone because I am a massive extrovert, like just always out, always with tons of friends. And like, I'm enjoying it at this point, but there was like,
It was shocking.
It was a shocking event for like
your,
the first 6 months.
Your roommates were gone always, or like in and out, kind of like.
Well, I mean, so my roommates both moved out at the beginning of the pandemic. My previous roommates, who I was friends with, they left in March, and then Jake was hanging out for a while, and then I got two new roommates in June. And they've turned out to be like the most amazing, wonderful people. And we do hang out sometimes. We didn't know each other before this. It just it just worked out really well that they're so cool. Yeah. And they get along with each other super well, which is like wild because they never met each other before this. And they're both deeply, deeply obsessed with the WNBA and RuPaul's Drag Race, like just the U.S. Drag Race, like international drag race, and they have so much in common with each other. So it's like it's we have a good situation, but it's just like
you were effectively alone for at least some of the time while you got to know each other and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, but it's also like, you know, like they're doing their thing. Like two people cannot like replace like the kind of like social life that I was leading, and it's there's part of me that like sort of has like become more introverted and be like I like spending 4 days alone now, and it's gonna be so weird to like go back to that mode of just being out all the time.
But that is such a cool like opposite experience of mine, because so like it sounds like a growth thing for you to have become more comfortable by yourself and like doing things with yourself, you know, like even if there were hard times, you sound like you're like kind of proud of yourself. I don't know, like that.
Yeah,
you,
I mean, definitely, it's good to know I have the option.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Whereas I, before going into this, because you say, oh, because we're different, because I'm an introvert. I am very social, but I'm like a on the border. You know, I'm an observer. I'm not a participant. I like to be a part of every social group, but like on the outer sphere where I'm just like watching and I am aware of everything. And some people nod to me, you know. And I was always very comfortable being alone and being like a solo individual. This is how you see me. This is how I spend time. But then it turns out that I actually had like such a rich social life that my solo time was just like recharging time to go be social. You get me?
Yeah.
And then when you strip away all that social and you just leave me with all this alone time, yeah, I probably dealt with it a lot better than people who like weren't used to it. But my whole world kind of crumbled on me because it became apparent that I cannot just continue to be an island. You know what I mean? Like, it just was like, oh shit. And my just like didn't connect with any, like, I don't connect with people because I'm so like fine being alone. Like, I don't know. It got messed up in moments, you know, like all the way from when the pandemic was terrible to like when you start being like, I'm lonely and I just wanna, I'm gonna break this. I need to have sex or like whatever. And you're like, fuck. Who am I close? Like you start reassessing every relationship. It's bad for a solo person.
No, I mean, I understand. It's been super challenging for everyone.
Yeah, of course. I can't imagine having kids. Shout out to everybody.
Oh my God. Having kids during this sounds like a hell that I do not. I can't imagine. I'm sorry to people who are listening with kids. I respect you.
Yeah, I hate the cats. The cats are terrible. They're just cats. Yeah. Totally. They barely even do anything.
I will say, actually, it's messed up because I don't want to alienate our listeners with children, but, you know, like...
they know.
I'm about to alienate them, yeah, but, like... You know, growing up as like a Latin girl and whatever, and like Catholic and whatever the fuck, I was very much being like raised to be a mom. You know what I mean? To like have kids and be a wife and like be pretty so you get a good husband, like all that shit. And it was like weird and fucked up that I would be like 12 and 14 and be like, I don't want to have children. I don't want to be a wife. You know, like I'm the only one of my cousins and my grandparents, my uncles and all, they'd just be like, oh, that's funny. You're being quirky, right? Like you'll get over that when you get older. And everybody always just like ridiculed me. Like, I don't know what other way to put it as. And the world increasingly gets worse and worse, you guys. And every single day, no matter like how bad things are, there's like this little voice in the back of my head that's like, you were totally right.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like, why would you bring children into like, dude, increased fucking birth rate, like deaths?
No,
like,
it's allergies. So crazy.
Yeah, the environment is fucked. It just like what? No, sorry, not to be like completely hopeless for everyone who has children, but it's like, what are you giving them? I don't understand.
I mean, I'm someone that like I always wanted to have kids, and yeah. The pandemic has kind of made me feel like I could go either way on it, just because like having kids right now seems so hard, and like just for the world that we're in, that I'm just like, I don't know.
Would you ever adopt? Would you want to adopt or no?
Maybe. I mean, I just feel maybe, but I feel kind of like I feel like there's a genuine like, yeah, who the fuck knows? Cause yeah, I'm not. Yeah.
Well, there's also the natural, you know, speaking of anthropology, right? Like,
yeah,
because Kate's book is called Dirtbag Anthropology. And so, like, anthropologically speaking, it is in the nature of humanity to just like continue to survive no matter what the environment is, you know? So it's like a triumph of the species that people continue to have children and to raise nice people in these increasingly horrible situations. But like, man, they're increasingly horrible situations.
Yeah, it really is. It really is pretty. It feels like a rough world to bring a tiny person into. And also, I think just like to see how much of like a hit that women, especially women with children, have taken during this pandemic. There's, you know, that's just like, I mean, obviously not every instance, but like huge amounts of women are just like have given up everything else in their life to be full-time caretakers. And I'm glad that I don't have to take care of the cats. That's not something
you
have
to consider.
Yeah.
Well, I just bring up the adoption thing because like I feel like since I was a kid, that was always like my fail-safe, because I was always like, I understand wanting to like mother, you know, and like loving something and wanting to contribute, I guess, to like the growth of humanity and all that stuff. So I would see like, if I ever felt like that whole fucking imaginary, what is it, biological clock shit that people talk about, then I would be like, okay, well, let me find a child that has nobody, right? That I can share my wealth and fucking knowledge and whatever the fuck with, if I like became a mentally stable person. Doubtful. But I've never had the urge, but I always like ask people, because I'm like, you know, it doesn't always seem logical to me to just ascribe to like it has to be my genetic copy, you know. Like, I totally see the validity in like wanting to love someone and help them succeed and pass on your knowledge and your loves and your traditions, but like, why does it have to come out of my vagina? You know.
Yeah, that was like, that's one of the biggest things, like in the book that you're talking about. I was married to a woman, and I was very stoked at that time that someday I would get to have a kid without ever having to be pregnant. Yeah. And I felt like I won the lottery. And then when I don't know, because I feel you. Like, I do feel that impulse to love, but like the impulse to
birth.
I do not have it. Yeah.
Well, for the listener, let's explain your book, which is central to everything we're talking about here. So, Kate, you just came out with a new audiobook on Amazon.
Audible.
Yeah. Which is Amazon thing.
The name of the platform,
Sure. If you have Audible.
But if you have, like, Amazon Prime, that means you can use your points and shit to buy her book.
Or you can sign up for the free trial.
Or the free trial,
Here, sign up for the free trial, and then before you have to pay, listen to the book and then unsign up.
Yeah.
This is all with asterisks around it. None of this can be used in court.
We didn't say that.
Wink, wink, wink. Hypothetically do that to listen to Kate's book. But yeah, so your book, which you've been putting together for the last year, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. Also, sorry to interrupt you, but it's awesome that you you know, like I remember when you were like, I guess, you know, pandemic time, I'm just going to write this book then finally. And
yeah, it's called King Lear.
No, she's like one of the few that I've spoken to where like actually she did the thing that like 9 months ago she was like, I'm going to do this. And
well, yeah. I had to. I mean, because yeah. I don't think if this was like a self-imposed deadline that I would have been able to do it. But the thing is I was supposed to write this book. This book was like supposed to be published in like 2019.
Yeah.
But then in 2019, at the beginning of the year, I went through great personal tragedy. And like a lot of it was like around like stuff that I was writing about in the book, you know? Yeah. So I was like, oh, okay, well, I have to both, like, I have to change the book. Like, I threw away a lot of what I wrote and had to write different stuff. So it got finished in 2020 instead. But I'm glad because I think it was much better than what I had intended to write.
You know? It's like adaptation or something where, like, the things that happen within what you're writing about affect the product itself.
Yeah, no, it was like that. It was definitely like that.
But yeah, so your book is kind of jokingly an anthropology of masculinity and dirtbag men and regular men and, you know, the whole thing, right? How would you pitch it?
So that's the thing is I'm not very good at pitching it, but I will try.
Yeah, so, practice on us. Come on.
Well, so I started pitching this book at the height of Me Too, and it was originally called Good Guys, and I wanted to answer the question of what does positive, healthy masculinity look like? And I felt like there was something in the discourse around masculinity, particularly at the height of Me Too, which felt like, okay, this is moving in a positive direction, but it's also really simplistic. Like, you know, it's like, hey, men, don't sexually harass people. And it's like, yeah, of course, you know, but like, it's also...
It needs to be said.
Right? It needs to be said. Yeah. And I did say that explicitly in the book again and again. But I also think that like this, you just like, I don't know, the way that people were talking about stuff on the internet, especially kind of struck me as just like very black and white, very much like not how people are, you know, like I would get into discussions with friends and like I remember one thing that happened to me is like I had a male friend who like was like pretty fucked up to a woman and like I mean they had sex when you know she was drunk and they had kind of a debate afterwards about like with themselves about like was this consensual and just like the process of like do I stay friends with this person, how do I support him, how do I support her, and I found myself in a lot of these really complicated situations that I was just like there's nothing on the internet that like is telling me how to deal with the human aspect of these changes. And so I wanted to write a book that was like about, you know, the actual experience of being a person living in this changing world and navigating it from a compassionate place. And so I divided it up into chapters based on like some of the main areas I felt like men had really impacted my life, like dating, fatherhood, religion, the internet, friendship. And so I broke it down, and I had originally kind of wanted to write like, you know, just sort of like a little bit more of like a nonfiction sort of like cultural commentary thing. But then Audible was like really pushing me for like kind of, no, go memoir. And I'm glad I did, because I got to dig really deep into my relationships with men. And so in each essay, each chapter has an essay where I like talk about my relationship with like a specific man and or men and like how cultural expectations of masculinity have affected it, affected that relationship, like both my participation in the relationship and his. And then I also interviewed some other people. I thought it was really important to talk to men in a book about masculinity. And, yeah, it was cool. I mean, you know, I think one of the most rewarding experiences in the book was like, I got to talk to my dad about some super real shit. And,
fatherhood, obviously. I was about to be like, what relationship did you have?
I had the relationship with my dad.
Sorry. I am high. I actually wanted to ask you, which is the chapter that you, and I guess maybe like, who's the person that you interviewed or that you talked about in regards to friendship with males? And I ask it as a woman who does have a lot of male friends, who's friends with your boyfriend, right? Man, when that whole like joke trope started of like the guys girl shit, Kate, that was a conflicting moment for me because, you know, like when I was younger, when I was like in high school, being a guy's girl was an insult in a different way. It was like the girls don't like you and that's why you're friends with the boy. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like because you're not feminine in the right ways and you don't measure up to us in certain ways and you like boy things. And so you fucking hang out with the boys. And then maybe briefly it was fine and cool. But then at a certain point it turned into, well, the guys, girls are the ones who like co-signed on every bad thing a guy ever did. And we like play the game to be liked by them and always like yes to everything. And like, that is not my experience of being friends with men, you know?
It's definitely.
Yeah. So yeah. What conclusion anthropologically did you come to with your friendship chapter with men?
So the friendship chapter is the last chapter of the book.
Oh, okay.
I interviewed two people for that chapter. I interviewed my friend David Cedric, and I interviewed Jake again, because I interviewed Jake for the internet chapter in 2019.
I like how friendship with a man is the final challenge, being friends.
Yeah. Dude, it's harder than fucking one or marrying one or going out with one or getting one to move in.
And it's also a relationship that ideally should be included to some degree in all of those other things, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
I interviewed like a theme that really emerged in the book that I, like, as I was writing it, it wasn't something that I set out to put in it, but when I was like in the process of writing it, I realized that like it's actually about conflict and about dealing with conflict in like a way that helps you grow instead of shuts you off from other people. And you know, because that, like, anytime you want to make a big change in society, it's conflict. It's like, whether it's like class, you know, the eternal class conflict, or your, you know, it's interpersonal conflict, you know, and both, I think, in, you know, in this instance. But I was having a lot of conflicts with my friend David Cedric at the time, and you know, he was really like, he was getting mad at me because I'd get mad at him about like some stuff that he would say that I thought was like sexist, and there were ways that he felt like I really wasn't being like a fair friend to him and hearing him out. So I talked to him about that, and also, like, you know, another thing that we were dealing with at that time together is, you know, we're really both grieving Raghav, and that was like such a kind of, I don't know, that was, it was such an important thing in our friendship, and it kind of like the emotional connection that I think that we felt through that was like something that really informed the way that we dealt with or didn't deal with like the other conversations about sexism or comedy or whatever. So we sat down and we talked about that. I decided to throw another interview in with Jake at the end because there had been some updates. So,
Was the interview with Jake on the internet part like early on?
The internet interview with Jake was the second time I met Jake.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. So that is tied into Why You Mad Lore, right? Because this is for our listeners only, some lore, is when you were first on the show, you were not Jake's girlfriend. You were one of the women who came on the show to be like, weird to be here with Jake, because I actually used to have him blocked on Twitter because we hated each other. And you had like some story about him being a fucking asshole. And then like, no lie, like 2 weeks later, it was like, Jake was like, I think Kate likes me. And I was like, really? You're so lucky. You should go out with Kate. And he fucking goes out with Kate and like everything, you know, works out and whatever. And I'm like, this is an amazing, beautiful story. So I am witness to the fact that it started as like, first you guys like didn't, or like, I don't know, Jake was being typical internet Jake, I guess, right? And yeah. Then you had, and so you guys, I assume, talked about that. So then why does Jake then come up on the friendship chapter and not like in a romantic chapter again?
Well, you know, I mean, I guess like, the thing is, so like in the chapter about the internet, it's a chapter all about internet conflicts. And I wrote about it. I wrote about Gamergate as like a conflict I was not involved with.
Why didn't you interview me about that? I want to talk about Gamergate.
Because I wanted to talk about your opinion about Gamergate.
I'm kidding. Because I wanted to talk to Mike Drucker.
I don't know anything about Gamergate anyway. Yeah.
And then I wrote about, this is a long-winded answer, but I'm going to get back to it soon. And then I interviewed this guy named Dylan Marin, who has this really cool podcast called Conversations with People Who Hate Me. And he talks to his trolls online. And, like, he feels like he's been able to find common ground with, like, you know, people that have said genuinely horrible stuff onto him on the internet. And I wrote about my own experience being a woman online, like particularly with like the harassment that I've experienced from some of these same chuds that harass Jake, like these compound media motherfuckers or whatever, and just like how horrible, you know, that experience has been, and the fact that I don't want to resolve it with them, like even in a world where like it is possible to see his their humanity or whatever, like I don't want to. And so then I was like, okay, who's someone whose humanity that like I've had a conflict with that I do want to see, that I'm actually like interested in like learning about that person, being friends, you know? So I interviewed Jake, and then, you know, like obviously we're a lot of time passed, we're friends, and then I feel like we never would have dated if we like had it become like friends, of course, you know, like they're a long intermediate stage, but also, you know, like everything that like everything that made us had a conflict in the first place, like that's still true about us, like that's still in there, you know, like we're still both those people, just also with like many other dimensions too, you know. And so I think that like, I guess like for me in a romantic relationship, like the thing that I have, I don't know, really felt like, especially throughout like the past like couple years of my life in particular, is that, you know, like the things that you would apply to any friendship are, you know, just kind of like, those are the principles that you want to live your life by, like including romantically, I think, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. I agree. As somebody who has been sublimating my romantic needs by putting them out to all my different kinds of friends, I agree.
Well, I mean, I've done that too, but it's kind of like I mean especially like with stand-up, I like have had all these like guys that I was like so in love with, and we were like friends, and it was like, you know, all tortured and shit, but I don't know, at the end of the, I don't know, I it's just kind of weird, because it's just like, I when I started to like write this book, I didn't, like, I wanted to write, like, a compassionate book where I could see things from other perspectives, especially, like, the men in my life that I hadn't felt like I wanted to understand or had understood. And if, I don't think I could have wrote that book at the point that I pitched it. But then after I got, like, the absolute shit kicked out of me by life for 2 years, then I was ready to write the thing that I set out to in the first place, you know?
I mean, it's an amazing arc. I didn't know you were married to a woman until you talked about it as part of this book.
That was a long time ago at this point, not to give away my age, but you know, it was at least 2-3 years ago.
Wink, wink.
Yeah.
What were you going to say, Jake?
I was just, just laughing sarcastically.
I fucking Kate just reminded me of something. It's totally, well, first of all, this could be a segue into talking about D'Elia, because conflictingly enough, I just watched the stupid quote-unquote 9-minute apology, right? But for me, it brought up some shit where I am always thinking about how, like, patriarchy hurts men, right? But that does not mean that I think that the D'Elia thing was good or whatever. But before we go there, and I don't want to go away, just a stupid sidetrack. when you were saying about Dylan Maron, right? Because yeah, he does have a great show where he, like, talks to people from the internet that he, like, disagreed with and whatnot. Weird fucking fact. Years ago, like years before Dylan's show, I produced, we only made 3 episodes of a podcast with Kurt Metzger and Louis Katz.
Oh, yeah.
Where I don't think, we never put it out, dude.
Not really talking about this.
Like, he talked about it. Yeah. So he talked about it because what we did was, like, you remember when it was like this phase on Facebook where Kurt would literally just go on Facebook and post horrible takes?
Yeah, I liked
it. And then the whole world would get super mad at him.
Yeah.
He was so angry on Facebook.
It was so mad, like a coke fueled anger, fucking bad opinions on fucking Facebook. And the thing is, like, man, this is where all my conflict is, being like the girl friend of guys, right? People now who take it as like, oh, you were enabling these people, right? Like, you're one of the girls that laughs off the fucking jokes and whatever the fuck. And it's like, no, I was actually the one being like, what the fuck did you just say on Facebook? You know, like, I am actually the one being like, what?
How? Yeah, I get you, because I think that we have, like, I feel like I relate to you in a certain way more than I have ever related to anyone else. And specifically in the way of, like, maybe an outside observer would be like, she's a guy's girl or something. Like, I'm always just, like, around guys and, you know, at least at this point. But, like, I'm my full feminist self in all of those situations. And exactly. I don't, like, I'm really loyal to people. I'm really understanding. But, like, a lot of that has been, like, holding these kind of, like, dirtbag men to account to some extent.
Exactly, yes.
I mean, I have...
Like, I'm friends with the dirtbags, but I hold them to account. Like, I am the person that, because what's fucked up about dirtbags, I think, across all the spectrums, tell me if you guys disagree, because I think you're both friends with dirtbags, is that they, like, they are unwilling to hear negative feedback if they don't respect you, right? Like, if it's coming from a person that they don't respect or look up to or believe in or have a relationship with, then it's bullshit and it doesn't matter. But when somebody within their circle or that they do like or that they have a friendship with says to them, man, that joke was off, you know, like, you should think about why you say this kind of thing about women or shit like that, it does fucking penetrate. You know what I mean? Like,
I was thinking about this while I was listening to the book, because there's a part where you talk about, like, being a woman in the comedy scene and, like, in the come up and, like, open miking and trying to advance your career and stuff like that. And then you talk to Margaret Cho about, you know, her takes on that sort of thing. And there's, like, something that's, like, I knew is true, but I haven't thought about in a while, because it's kind of like, it kind of feels like it's in the cultural politics of, like, the recent past, you know, maybe like 5 years ago or something like that. It's not a thing that people talk about as much now. Now we're on to conflict is not abuse or whatever the fuck. But now, like, the particular way in which comedy is, like, a quote unquote boys club and is all steeped in the patriarchy and all this stuff is really interesting. I don't think it went away, and it still has, it's like a mutated version of this thing that you described, which is that the scene itself accepts no criticism. Like, everything is based around it, comedy being a cohesive unit, like, where the rule is no one,
like, us versus them.
Yeah. And no, and it does not tolerate people, like, criticizing it. And so yeah. what Louisa was just saying about like how there's these very specific ways in which men will in comedy will allow themselves to be criticized only if it's like, you know, the fucking cellar table. Someone is doing one of those yeah. moments you would see on Louis or something like that, where it's like, it's hey,
funny. Yeah.
Yeah. Or if it's like Patrice, you know, fucking yeah. teaching class or whatever, you know, shop or whatever, like only in these really specifically fetishized ways is it are acceptable to be criticized like at all, which is a byproduct of something yeah. really bizarre. And so
toxic masculinity,
you know, I was thinking about that because there's like, this thing that's really common as a guy, it's like kind of, it's surprising to me, but now it makes a little bit more sense that I've thought about it, which is that I sometimes find myself disagreeing with people in the world of comedy and I go, you know, fuck you. And I say something about it. And then everyone characterizes me as being like really hard to work with. And oh, he has beefs. He's always on Twitter beefing with people. It's like, no, I just disagree with you. But sometimes, but like, I personally think I'm right about the things that I'm saying. It's usually how people feel. But sometimes I'll talk to
also, welcome to the feminist problem.
This is
Jake.
What I'm fucking saying.
You are hard to work
when
with.
When I'm talking to women about this, they'll often say, like, oh, I agree with you, but I don't say
like,
that
yeah,
because
exactly.
the entire fucking machine comes down on your head when you say something like that. And so I'm this mm-hmm. idiot because I'm like a guy and I experience a certain enough privilege to be like, no, let's fight it, you know? And everyone else yeah. is like, no, Whisper Network, and you can't fucking attack that guy because he'll kill you and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought that was kind of interesting because we're living in a moment where we do have like, you know, these kind of big elevated like feminist hires, like you talk about Amy Schumer and stuff like that within the comedy world. And it's sort of like if when things were post-racial after Barack Obama, now we're like, no, gender shit is fixed in comedy, but it's not. It's still structured exactly like that. It's just like there's been a few tweaks to the face to kind of make it seem like less like that. But it's still, I guess, like steeped in it's something that is specific to like masculinity, I guess.
Yeah, I definitely think the culture of comedy in general is patriarchal. You know, it's like it's messed up. And I don't know. I do think it's something I brought up before because like I love a lot of hate to be offensive, but like older stand up comedy women, you know, sorry to those of you who listen, you know what I mean? But like women who started stand up in the 80s and the early 90s and who are still doing stand up and who a lot of people now, nowadays, you know, young people, men and women alike, will lump these women into the category of like Guy Branum when he wrote that article. Do you remember the article about the table at the cellar, right?
Yeah.
Which was like an allegory, whatever, but I agreed overall with his point, which is that it's a patriarchal institution comedy, right? But in his introduction, he did this thing where he like was like, there's like no women and no gay people at the comedy cellar, right? Which effectively erased the women and gay people who are at the comedy cellar, right? But, you know, I don't think he did it on purpose and he didn't mean anything maliciously, but I also think it kind of was on purpose because of this sentiment that floats around, I would say around like the millennial crowd of like the women and the gays who like succeeded in any way, who are still around, who are still working, who got into the boys club, did so through compromise, through fucking undersigning every fucked up thing, through like laughing off when somebody grabbed their ass, through just being the token who thinks everything is fine, right? And sure, maybe every single one of them has moments in which they were a token or in which they like shrugged something off that they probably shouldn't have had to shrug off, you know, like they should have had some kind of support system to make it okay for them to be like, don't fucking touch me or whatever, right? But the reality is, every woman, every gay person, every non-binary, every trans person has
every
the
potato
platform.
Head.
Oh, am I out?
No, I said potato head when you were describing.
Oh, they have the platform that they have today because these people in the generation before opened the door to them. You know what I mean? Like they made the first steps, but that doesn't mean that they deserve a free pass, like any of that, you know, like I think the conversation needs to be flowing across these generations, but it was just like a very weird fucked up turn to just be like every non-male, let's say, who has a modicum of success and like was in this for a long time and has achieved some traditional successes at certain clubs, has gotten some things on TV, compromise themselves and like, you also are compromising yourself.
Yeah,
you
know? No, we all are. We all are. And I mean, it's also like, the thing is, I'm trying to figure out how to put this into words. It's not all compromise, right? Because like this thing that we were just talking about of like,
some is gain.
Yeah, I mean, but also like, you can have a genuine friendship and enjoyable relationship with people without like co-signing everything, you know. One thing that I feel really sad about sometimes is like the extent to which like everyone in comedy has had to like pick their sides, you know. And you know, and by pick their sides, I mean like you're either like on the like free speech, say horrible shit, anti-cancel culture side, or you're on the like the super like woke side. And I mean, yeah, I guess like if you just look at me and like my stuff, I'm definitely like on the woke side. But it's like I don't know. I don't know. Before it felt like you had to like pick sides and only certain people could be friends. I had rewarding relationships in which I feel like I changed some people's minds about stuff, you know?
Not just that, Kate, but like, okay, before we had to pick sides, don't you think part of the reason that we were guys, girls in certain contexts is because also our sense of humor was this like darker, crossing boundaries, going deep into like sexuality, like weird fucked up shit. Like we were into that shit. That's why you liked us. You know, like that's what's so crazy to me with like the people who are quote unquote on the other side of this comedy. Because like, as you're saying, I do feel this way. I feel like now that's part of the assessment that I'm going through, is that I know that like, let's say when shit reopens, there's a bunch of people now that like, are we going to say hi to each other? Are we going to make eye contact? Do you hate me now because I was vocal about the fact that I don't fucking want all right people and Nazis and shit in our venues and in our comedy shows and on our podcast? Like, is this now a problem, right? Are we now enemies? When 2 years ago, you liked me precisely because of the fact that we have the same exact sense of humor, right? So why aren't you examining that disconnect? I don't know. I'm happy.
Well, that's weird because they should be treating you the way they would treat like the Patrice thing, where it's like, well, I approve of this person, therefore, like, I will listen to what they're saying about this. But suddenly it gets switched back around and it's like, well, no, they're coming at me from the angle that I've decided is wrong. Now I disagree with this person.
Well, but that's why I would tell you that there's three groups, right? Like Kate was saying, there's two, like, right? Those of us who like land on the woke side, which honestly, I'd rather go down in history as not a fucking alt-right sympathizer.
Yeah, of course.
The people who land on the alt-right possibly side, right? Free speech, all that shit. And there is actually like a giant contingent in the middle of people who like, I think seem like frozen deer in headlights, who are just like, what? I just came here to do jokes. And then they're like, I like people on both sides. And they're like sitting there having to do the math of like, who helps their career more? Who do they have a more like real relationship with, right? And more years and whatever the fuck. And they start being like, discard Luisa in favor of Jay, discard whoever in favor of, you know, that kind of shit. And I think they're like that middle matters more than those of us who are clearly like picking a side, you know?
Yeah,
what I mean?
I mean, the thing is though, is it's becoming increasingly impossible. I'm thinking of one really good friend I have. I love her to pieces. She's your friend too. Yeah. And, you know, she is somebody that like puts a huge value on having harmony with people, on being really nice to everybody.
Yeah.
But, you know, and kind of like being someone that can just be kind to people regardless of their political affiliation or whatever. But these alt-right people, what they've done, like, they've made themselves, like, so horrible that even eventually people who are like, I just want to be nice to everybody, I'm just here for my own career,
I can't
like
be
jokes.
Part of this. Yeah.
You know, like, the more it escalates, like, in the direction of, like, the kind of alt-right shit, like, the more people in the middle have to end up having to pick their side, too.
Which, honestly, is why I think it's good that like all three of us, we talk about it. You know, we talk about you guys you know, we've all had different experiences, I guess I should say, but we all talk about these things that are going on with the harassment and doxing and like bad shit that is said and done to you under the guise of like we're doing comedy. And the reason I think it's good is because thinking back like on Seth Simon's last article and whatever, Jake and I talked about how like Kate, honestly, Red Eye on Fox was like a normal fucking just gig that comics did. You know what I mean? Like it was like, yeah. Oh, it's just like comics go where gigs are. They do Red Eye. And then after that, they met Mike Cernovich. So now they do shit with Mike Cernovich. And then like it like snowballed in this way where at the time, like we didn't see it. You know, so like I read Seth's things now and I'm like, oh dude, he's fucking right, he's like tracing real shit, but at the time it didn't seem to us like that's what they're doing, platforming whomever and like increasingly serving this particular audience, but that is what it was happening, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I feel stupid because I didn't see it so clearly at the time, so to me now I'm like, I want to help comedy fans be like, yeah, don't like be aware that this is a thing that's happening. Let's talk about it. And like you use your dollars and your voice and your eyes, you know, like the shit you view to see good people, you know, instead of this fucked up shit. I wish I had known, I guess, is what I'm saying. I don't know.
Kind of reminds me of the way you were describing having written your book where it's like, you grew enough to be able to write it the way you wanted to write it after having already like signed the deal to make the book. I guess that kind of reminded me on a structural level of like when I made my first album, I didn't have the material for it when I was like, I want to make this. Yeah. But by making that deal, I then was like, I'm now in a situation where I've got to make it. And I did. And then it was made and it motivated me in that way. But I kind of think there's something to that with like this stuff with these guys going down like this Red Eye path where they're like, I'll put a stake out in the ground in front of me and it's an opportunity. And then now once I've decided to like put myself onto this path, anyone that criticizes me, I'm telling them I can deflect by going, I already have to do this. I already put myself in this situation and this is like a career and I'm a comedian and it's all justified by that's is what a comedian is. I don't know. It's kind of weird. Fucking mushroom.
I just want to say, since you both have pointed to this like idea of like how you are more productive or more creative under external constraints, right?
Yeah.
That explains why I have $200,000 worth of college loans. Thank you so much. Because working full time, the only thing that forced me to read all the things I wanted to read and wished to read was having deadlines and having to write a paper. So suck it, everybody who makes fun of me for having an insurmountable amount of student loans.
Who's making fun of you?
Oh, but this fucking Keith, Kurt podcast.
Oh, yeah.
I have the three episodes somewhere, so I'll send them to you, Jake. But Kate, if you want to read.
What was the concept of that show, though?
Yeah, because the concept was, it was like during this phase when Kurt was like fucking blowing up on people. Like he was like stating like a horrible opinion joke/joke on Facebook, and then it would just be like hundreds of comments from all his followers being like responding, right? And then he would always have like a mad person that was just like super mad about whatever the joke was about. So we did three episodes where he had these people on, and like Louis was the mediator, Louis Katz, and Kurt was like dealing with like what the criticism was from this internet person.
Yeah.
And they were actually pretty good. And then it just fell apart because of their schedules. Like it didn't work or whatever. And so like we never put it out. But it's funny to me that like it worked out with a much nicer person like Dylan.
It's weird. I go back and forth with this because every comedian naturally kind of comes up with that idea. Yeah. Like it's a way, it's the comedic way of thought is like kind of this like perverted version of like dialectical thinking or something where like I'm going to take the thing that I am opposed to head on, and like everyone's always got this thing where they're like, come on the podcast and we'll debate about it or whatever. And it's usually I don't really do that with people that hate me because it just, there's all this other stuff involved where it's like their show and they're going to profit off of it, and I just you know, debate is kind of theater in itself. It's not really a good way to make a point and all this stuff. But comedically, sometimes I'm tempted because there is something to, I mean, the way me and Kate met, which is, you know, fucking banging our heads against each other in a way. And then later on, kind of thinking about it and going, oh, I can see your side of that or whatever. But there's something to it where, like, as toxic as that kind of is in a way, like, I can see, I kind of can understand, like, the weird gold you can pan out of the bottom of a situation like that. It's just the problem is everyone that's doing that in comedy is doing it specifically in this way where they're, like, doing an alt-right podcast and they're like, we're going to have a Nazi on and, like, you know, really fucking make a threatening situation and go, hey, do you want to come on and talk about Antifa or some shit?
I want to say just really quickly, though, to represent Dylan fairly, he's not debating that. People's points of view at all, which is the comedian impulse, right?
Yeah.
Dylan is trying to find a
common ground or like...
A human understanding of like, what were you feeling when you posted that? What happened in your day? You know, like what led you to these beliefs? But it's never debate about like whether or not a person, you know, is a dumb bitch or something.
But you know what, like, though? In Kurt's defense, it wasn't that when we did the show, you know, like this was pre. So this is so funny to be like an internet archaeologist, I guess this is what I am. But this was before Kurt's big giant like he had to apologize for post, which do you guys remember that or no?
I think that was the rape one.
The UCB stuff.
The Aaron Glazer thing.
So the Aaron Glazer thing. So when a bunch of women came out and said Aaron Glazer harassed them or abused them or raped them, etc., like all various degrees, he hears this from somebody, right? High as fuck. And he goes on fucking Facebook and he posts something to the effect of like, if all of this shit really happened, why would you not go to the police instead of going to like the internet to talk shit about UCB and this comic, right? And then his all of his comments were just like people like, why do you think that the police would do anything? You're like reinforcing this framework of like, if you don't have evidence, then it didn't really happen. And you're fucking reinforcing not believing women and, you know, like all this stuff, right? And it was like enough that he had to shut down his account and like people wrote articles. Like it was like a big fucking deal because it was like, the way they framed it was that Kurt was like anti-rape victims, right? Like he did a whole like blame the victims thing. And to his dumb fucking used to be a Mormon or whatever the fuck he was ass, he thought he was like starting a debate. You know what I mean? Like he was like, we're fucking going to debate this shit. As he had been doing with a lot of stupid topics before that. And he gets like canceled, I guess, before we were calling it that. But then there were those of us, friends of his, who were like, dude, what the fuck? Like texting him personally. And then he's like thinking about it. And so then they did a race wars where Kurt like apologized. Like he explained that he fucking talked to women who had been harassed or abused or raped, and that now he understood why women don't go to the cops. And it's like all this shit where like, yeah, sure, you shouldn't have had to have your hand held through all of this shit before you used your platform to say some harmful shit, but you did learn, right? And you did like fucking realize and like bring the shit up. So it was like before he got fully blackpilled, I guess, right, is the way to put it. And before he just like doubled down on like, now I do this podcast with Mike Cernovich, you know, and like,
yeah, I liked him a lot back then.
Yeah, he was still really doing the like, I am trying to cross the line, but I'm willing to hear you kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then at some point, all these guys, they believed this culture, cancel culture shit, and they became fully defensive and absolutely unable to hear the feedback that says like, whoa, 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 you're crossing into a line that you shouldn't.
Some aspect of this that I kind of keep thinking about is like, So with this like dialectical thing I was talking about, where like it's like the word that's bouncing around in my head from a thing I tried to write a while back is like dummy dialectics. Like it's like a thing where you're tricking yourself into thinking that you're doing this like really, really logical way of parsing things out. Is that every once in a while I'll talk to a comic who's like, you know, hey, I have like, you know, far right people and like the Westboro Baptist Church on my show and all these people. And it's like, it's because I'm curious and it's because I'm more curious than you, you know, libtard snowflake. You wouldn't listen to these people, you know? And I know what they're trying to do. And I've thought that way as a comic before. And I understand why they think it's smart. But what always occurs to me when I think about it long enough, I'm like, are they right? Is it? It's like, wait a minute. No. I've read plenty about the Westboro Baptist Church. I've learned a lot about it, and I've talked to a lot of people like that in my life. I didn't record it. But they're saying everything has to happen within the framework of, like, their platform and their body of work, and that's the only way for them to really, like, learn and see both
they're
all sides of
this thing.
Reinventing
the wheel every time, instead of fucking starting from read the text.
Anytime you talk to a comic who's like, well, what I do is I talk to everybody, you go, you should ask them, would you ever do this if there was not money and success and comedy involved? Do you actually have that curiosity? Because I think the answer is no. And I think that's why things get a little skewed with these like alt-right people, is because everything gets sucked up into their like machinery of their career. And so they've maybe even convinced themselves that what they're doing is being objective, but what they're doing is really disproportionately listening to a specifically agitated, like we call it like pathologized point of view over and over and over again, and platforming it like as a way of sort of kind of falsely portraying like, oh, I'm being objective or whatever. But it's not. If you don't do that in your own free time, if you're only platforming and only listening, and you know, as we talk about a lot of the show, that thing leads you down a money trail of like pursuing it more and more and more because it starts to incentivize you with money, then I don't think that you're actually like this philosophical, wise, you know, fucking whatever Duncan Trussell acid brain thinker that you think you are, you know?
Yeah.
And it's also like, I mean, I'm trying to think of how to express this. Not a new point, but like the stuff that is like the real opinions that prevent you from working or get you canceled or really piss people off is a lot of times like left opinions. The acceptable discourse that like you can't get canceled for is, you know, anything from center left to like
full
on
pretty
right. Middle of the road right, where it's not explicitly racist, but it is still racist.
Yeah.
But you know, like, it's only maybe now, like this year, becoming acceptable for people to talk about, like, for, by people I mean like mainstream media figures to talk about like apartheid in Israel and Palestinian apartheid. And you know, it's like the closest I've ever got to canceled has been like this week for saying that like Biden has done even less than Trump for COVID, which is like numerically true. Like, you know, like it's objective, but I mean, there are people that like, you know, I would have hoped would employ me someday that were like quote tweeting it, like, who is this
angry?
The thing. It's just
that's the worst. When this all is over, I feel like there are like gonna be a bunch of just like, oh, hey, what's up? I guess you hate me now.
See, I think that the thing I was just kind of on, and I was talking about how like you can simultaneously, like duplicitously, on the one hand, portray yourself as being like objective and curious, when in practice, all that you're actually platforming is a point of view that is skewed in a really far direction. The skewed thing that you are platforming, whether it be far right bullshit or like really, really toothless, cynical, like liberal, like id Paul stuff, is always protective of the center of power within the like the community and the industry that you're working in or whatever. And that's what's really kind of devious about this stuff, because it happens with the right wing stuff as like, you know, every shitty guy that we understand to be actually just misogynist is saying like, hey, I'm just seeing both sides. I'm just, you know, not covering up my fucking head in the sand like these goddamn liberal snowflakes or whatever, right? Yeah. And like there's a flip side to it where liberals do it and they're, you know, saying like, I'm speaking on behalf of, you know, fucking people that whatever, you know, that don't have like a voice or whatever. And it's like, neither of those things are entirely objective. And so I guess what I'm getting at is like, there's like a core like direction that the thing that all ideology within the comedy world still moves. And it is to protect the people like in power in the fucking comedy scene. And I guess that's why it's so,
well, but ultimately because they're protecting themselves. They're protecting their proximity to people in power in comedy. It is ultimately selfish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Also, I think a lot of it is tied into the boys club stuff, where it is also just like, because there's innately just knit together in the comedy world. It's still structurally from a bunch of fratty douchebags that are all friends with each other.
Yeah. Well, we're going to do plugs and everything, but my plug is going to be that I want you guys to let me into your bubble. And come over to my house and hang out with me because I am vaccinated. Thank you so much.
Oh wow.
My God. Yeah. So all that means is if I get COVID, I probably won't die, but I could still give you COVID. So I'm sorry, people who are not vaccinated. But if you're willing to risk it, you should come over. Let me in your bubble.
Well, I found out recently I'm fat enough to get the vaccine. So
hell yeah, dude. Fucking go on that BMI calculator and check it out, people.
Okay, just go. Just start eating more and then...
Eating more, yeah.
I can't eat more when you come to my house because... That's how we got here.
Guys worried about my health. And so I need to get the vaccine.
Well, fucking get it. In Brooklyn, there's this, like, whatever. I mean, there's, like, a lot to talk about with the vaccine situation, and we'll leave it for another episode, but I just wanted to throw that out there, that I miss both of you, and I would like to hang out with you.
Yeah, let's go in your bubble.
As soon as possible. But, Kate, the book we know is Dirtbag Anthropology. It is on Audible. People can do Audible a free Plus, trial.
So it's a free with any Audible subscription or the free trial. You don't have to use a credit or anything.
Yeah. But fucking Venmo Kate some money if you get it for free. Do it.
Yeah, do it like that.
Awesome. Send $5. I think that's like the way to do it.
Or become a subscriber to my podcast, which is Reply Guys, which is a leftist feminist comedy podcast.
One of the best out there. The best out there.
Yeah. Is there another one? I don't know.
No, it's the best out there.
You're kicking the shit out of
the one and only best.
Season of the Bitch. That's the other one.
Yeah, no. Jake, are you going to plug anything? Oh, but are we going to do... So if you want to do a Patreon episode, I am prepared and ready.
Okay.
Just got to take a pee break. Kate, do you want to answer fucking emails with us? Or do you want to
let
go
you
rest?
Guys go?
Okay, fair, fair.
So that you can see your Patreon episode. Yeah. This was so much fun. Thank you so much for having me, you guys.
Please. Yeah. Just for the listener, again, I want to just kind of plug Kate's book. It's really good. It's like really well put together audiobook, and it's got these interviews with like Kamau Bell and Margaret Cho and all these interesting people. And I thought the interview with your dad was really sweet and, you know, personal. And the whole part with Chicken John talking about, you know, what he conceives of as masculinity and stuff like that is I don't know, man. It's a really deep, pithy exploration into a stupid thing that we all have to live with.
And you haven't even heard your own interviews.
I have a bad memory, and so I'm excited to tell me what happens.
Surprised by your own words?
Like Why You Mad, you're the only return guest of Dirtbag
and the book. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so excited to hear.
See, it's mirrored. It's perfect. Love you, Kate. Thank you for doing it.
Love you guys too. I'll see you later.
Also, follow Kate on Twitter at Kate Willett. Spell her name correctly, and all the stuff will be in the info. Bye, everybody.
Bye. I'll see you guys later.
Bye. Pod in America, merch, Twitch, Patreon. Blah.